This hour of the Jason Rant Show is brought to you by You Build It. Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So, let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
So, this contrived button controversy of the Pacific Northwest, it's back, and now we have sound to make me more upset. Employees at Seattle area QFCs and Fred Meyer stores, they are upset that their stores have banned wearing Black Lives Matter buttons. And they claim, believe it or not, that it is a violation of their human rights. They have a human right to wear this button. They've filed complaints with the National Labor Relations Board, claiming it violates federal labor law and their union contract. Sam Dancy is an employee at a QFC in West Seattle. He also happens to be the shop steward. And he told King 5, look, we want to wear these buttons to start a conversation.
But it was May when George Floyd had the life stomped out of him. And we thought that this had brought attention and this was going to do something and it was going to make everybody aware and we could have a conversation and we could end it.
You can have a conversation when we're not paying you to stock shelves and man the checkout stand. You can have that conversation then. No one wants to have that conversation while they're grocery shopping, when they're shopping for eggs. That's not what they're there for. They don't want to chat about BLM with you. They want you to speed the checkout along so they can get home and make dinner and spend time with their kids. It seems very obvious why any grocery store, any business, might not want you to wear a button that you think is going to spawn conversations. As you're conversing, are you doing your job? It's obvious why they don't want these buttons being worn. But they still came forward and they said, look, we will compromise. Because we understand that it's 2020 and us telling you no means you're going to go on Twitter and call us racist. So they decided to say, you guys can wear wristbands. A wristband that says standing together. But apparently that doesn't work.
Well, the particular wristband that has a tie-in with this, it just says standing together. It's simply black and white. And standing together for what? If you're standing together with us, then you would let us wear these.
Oh, is that how it works? If you were standing together, you'll let us do what we want. That's not standing together. That's mob rule. Now, the question then becomes, would he take the same exact position if someone wanted to wear a Blue Lives Matter button? Or back the blue button? Or a MAGA button? Probably not. But let's say that he did. Let's say he was intellectually consistent. That, again, makes the point. Where does it end? Should the actual employer not have any say whatsoever in the political statements you want to make on the job? With the intent, as he said, to start conversations? Do they not have any say whatsoever? Now, King 5 has in their piece, they say, many employees in the United Food and Commercial Workers Union say it's wrong to not allow employees to wear Black Lives Matter buttons and other messages on the job. Okay, get new jobs. Get new jobs. If it's that important to you and you are that disturbed that this rule exists, get a new job. Go to the Safeway. Go to the Costco. I hear they have amazing benefits. The people worth the least to a company shouldn't have this level of entitlement. And yet here we are. Where the people who are literally worth the least to an organization feels like their voice should be louder than the people who deliver much more value, say like the managers. Now, if that sounds harsh, thank you. That was the intent. I want that to sound harsh. It is meant to be harsh. Because what they're asking for in this case and the entitlement complex that they are all suffering from needs to be met with that kind of harsh response and that kind of harsh condemnation. Whatever happened to just working hard and getting ahead? Do you really think that this story is actually about Black Lives Matter? It's not. It gives off the appearance of being about Black Lives Matter. It's not. It's about getting your way and dictating terms of a job. It is simply masquerading as an issue of racial justice. It's about the right, in their view, to wear a button because, well, you just decided you want to. Because you find it important. And this isn't happening in a bubble, right? This is happening in a long series of complaints and demands from people who do not bring value as much as they want to believe they do to the company. They bring some value, but not as much as they think. This is coming on the heels of employees saying they don't want to do clopenings, where you close one night and open the next. This from the same group of folks who demand $15 an hour despite whether or not their jobs actually deliver that kind of financial value. But they'll say it. They want a better work-life balance, which, of course, the balance being very clearly tipping the scales to the life part, not the work part. Cool. I think that's awesome if that's what you want. But you got to earn it. You don't just deserve it. You earn it. There are people who work really, really hard and they get in a position where their value to a company is that they can afford to take more time off and dictate some of the rules. Some people start their own businesses. I worked my tail off when I was younger. I took every single shift available. I worked every single holiday. To this day, I do stuff for free. I do it because it is a part of growing my career. For example, I'm going to start writing in foxnews.com. I'm doing it so people who go to foxnews.com, millions of people, see my name, and then they subscribe to my podcast if they don't live in this area. And when they get my podcast, you might also get two commercials, and they'll hear it, and they'll buy from it, and then I will get paid. That's how it works. I don't dictate stuff that I haven't earned. I haven't earned the right to publish wherever it is I want to publish. I haven't earned the right to go on any TV show I want to go on. I haven't earned that yet. But I work hard, and when I get to that point, I get that privilege. Just because they're talking about a button doesn't mean they're not focused on something much bigger. And this sort of stuff drives me absolutely nuts. It drives me absolutely nuts. And unless you push back at this unreasonable position, they're just going to ask for more, and then more, and then more again. That's what they do. And I hope that you're hearing this as a parent who's got kids who are sort of being raised in an environment where they're hearing from other people say, oh, you get to do that on your job? How, why? Oh, I demanded it. Don't let them develop that mindset. It's bad for their business. It's bad for their future. And when you see it, you stomp it out. Peyton the other day asked for a bathroom break. No, 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 no. You've not earned that. You don't get to use the urinal.
Never again will I be silly enough to ask for something that
what
is
do you
out
think
of my realm.
Bucket is for?
The bucket's getting full.
Sounds like a you problem. Maybe you didn't drink so much.
You don't allow me to empty the bucket. I've been working here for 13 months. What do you want me to do?
Okay, that is a reasonable point. I will bring you a second bucket.
Thank you.
But you're not emptying that one. You live with your consequence. You're listening to the Jason Rantz Show. When we come back, we're going to dive into a professor who thought it was okay to, in front of students, wish that Trump supporters would die. What she probably didn't realize was it was being recorded. We've got that audio when we come back. find me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants. Twitter.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending in the classroom?
So Marshall University has a professor. Her name is Jennifer Mosher. She has just recently been suspended for a political rant. Right before getting to whatever it is she's supposed to be doing. Oh, like her job, teaching kids, not yelling at kids about her insane political beliefs. She did this in the virtual classroom. She did it before her lesson plan. Kids were there. Some kid decided to record it, thankfully, because she felt compelled to wish death upon Trump supporters.
I think yesterday he held one inside. No one wore a mask. And I've become the type of person where I hope they all get it and die. I'm sorry, but...
Aren't you sorry? You don't sound sorry. It almost sounds like you're relishing in the fact that you hope they die. In fact, if you were sorry, dare I say you would not publicly tell people you hope they die?
That, I am so frustrated and just, I don't know what else to do. Mm-hmm. You can't argue with them. You can't talk sense into them. I said to somebody yesterday, I hope they all die before the election. That's the only saving hope I have right now. Definitely bootlickers. Anyhow, okay,
oh,
I'm going to stop talking about politics, because I really should not be talking politics in here.
No, you shouldn't have, you dummy. But you decided to, and now you're suspended. Student in the class posted the video to Twitter. And now you've been suspended. So, what's interesting in all of this, because I spent some time on Twitter looking at the reaction, and some people were blaming Donald Trump for this reaction. That they you just can't help it. Donald Trump is so evil. People just respond that way. And they take that position as if adults don't have any self-control. But it's also happening because on the left, and sometimes on the right, but in this case, obviously, it's against Donald Trump, so it's on the left. There is a culture that says this kind of rant, this kind of language is totally okay. This kind of dehumanizing other people, wishing them death, that it's okay. It's okay because Donald Trump is like Hitler. He's a fascist. They say that, and so it gives them permission to say awful dumpster fire things like this. This is a bad person. This is a bad person because she has this arrogance that she's so much better than everybody else, all of the lemmings who go to Trump rallies. They don't act the way she would act. And so she wishes them death. And then, of course, she pretends, oh, I'm ashamed to even admit it. Then don't admit it, you dummy. People like this need to be exposed. And there are a lot of people like this. If you want to see the video, I've got it up. Twitter.com/JasonRants. Twitter.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Foodie edition.
So as numbers across the state of Washington doing their steady decline as it relates to the coronavirus, whether we're talking about the amount of cases, the amount of hospitalizations, or the amount of deaths, they're all trending in the exact direction we want. Washington State has been called out for having numbers trending in the right direction. So as that's happening, you've got a lot of restaurants and bar owners stepping up who are already struggling to survive in this pandemic. They're begging for some sort of help from the governor. And something that they're asking is actually pretty simple from their perspective. They say, hey, let us sell alcohol after 10 p.m. Because currently these restaurants, they have to stop selling at 10 p.m. But as we know about booze, the markups are incredibly high. And that's a way that a lot of these restaurants end up making a profit. The ability to sell that $7 bottle of wine for $40. Or that cranberry vodka for $4.50, even though it only cost them 35 cents. That's where they make their money. And so folks like Dan Austin, friend of the show, he's the owner of the Flight Path in Burien, He also owns Peel and Press out in West Seattle. He got together with other owners of restaurants all across the state, 130 in all, to put some pressure on the governor and make some change. He spoke with King Five.
We're safe to operate from whenever till 10 p.m. We're safer than anywhere people are going to drink after 10 p.m. We need those hours back so that we can just try to survive.
He's just trying to survive. And it's not, of course, just him trying to survive. It's the people who work for him and all these other restaurants that are just looking for a little bit of help. Just a little bit. I'm not saying go nuts. They're not saying let everybody come in at 100% capacity. They're simply saying, could you give us just a little bit of a break? Just a little bit of a break. Because right now, for example, Dan Austin, they're hitting the capacity rule as they're supposed to. But because they have to limit the alcohol consumption at 10 p.m., he says his revenue has been cut by 30%. That's 30% that goes back into an economy to keep it from crashing in an area that's been hit very, very hard by this crisis. That's 30% that can help him pay the bills, help him pay his waitresses and waiters and busboys and chefs and bartenders. Inslee's office put out this useless statement that doesn't help, doesn't address anything, saying, yo, we're aware of the issues, constantly looking at ways to help without actually helping. There is a way to do this responsibly. The same way there's a way to reopen schools responsibly. We're seeing it in Cedro Woolley and Puyallup and Tacoma. We're seeing how they're opening schools for in-person learning, and they're doing it in a reasonable and responsible way because they want to cut down on the potential of spreading the coronavirus. Restaurants can do the same thing. There is a wrong way to do it, and you can look, for example, in the United Kingdom, specifically London, where they opened their pubs to a point where they weren't enforcing any of the mandates, they weren't enforcing the mask wearing and all that stuff, and all of a sudden, the numbers are trending in the wrong direction. Boris Johnson, Prime Minister, just came out 2 nights ago, was it? Saying, yeah, we got to roll back stuff. You're going to have to close by 10. The way they did it was irresponsible, but you can do it responsibly here. We know what's on the line. We know what's on the line from a personal health aspect of someone who might be a customer at these businesses. And we certainly know what's on the line from the perspective of a business owner in the economy. Can we not give just a little bit of help? You're listening to the Jason Rantz Show. Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. Attorney General Bill Barr has labeled Seattle an anarchist city for their handling of the CHOP zone. And now there's a threat to withhold federal funding. Congressman Adam Smith, a Democrat that represents part of Seattle. In fact, he's just two blocks away from the former CHOP zone. He's not happy. And he joins me now. Congressman, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Jason. It's good to be on. I always appreciate the chance.
So you're essentially contending that, number one, the move is political, and number two, it's likely unconstitutional. And to that point, you know, previous attempts to withhold federal funding, for example, on the sanctuary city status was rejected by the courts, correct?
Yeah. I mean, look, there's a number of different points to this. And look, we've got a real problem with extremist violence in this country, both right and left. It needs to actually be seriously addressed. But the problem with this is it's illegal and it's unconstitutional. I mean, the president's basically saying, I don't like the city of Seattle and Portland and New York, so I'm going to cut off their funds. And I hope your listeners would think, you know, what if Barack Obama had said, I don't like Oklahoma's gun laws. I think they're leading to too many deaths. You know, so I'm going to stop sending them federal money. I mean, if you don't oppose what the president is doing here, you basically support authoritarian government, that the president can decide on his own and against the law when he wants to cut money off to certain jurisdictions. I think this is wrong. The Democrat Republican does it, and it's a direct threat to the laws and the Constitution of this country.
So it's a little bit different than just simply saying, I don't like those cities, because arguably he doesn't like other cities that don't handle things particularly well. In this case, what the assertion is, you don't get funding if you're not going to enforce laws. And so,
yeah.
I suppose big picture first.
But again, there's no, tell me, Jason, where is the legal precedent? Where is legal ability for the president to make that determination? I mean, look, I was a prosecutor. Every mm-hmm. jurisdiction makes a decision in every case. You know, you don't, you know, there are mitigating circumstances. So if you're going to say, look, here's a law. If I can find an instance where you didn't enforce it, I will cut off your money. That is power that no president should have.
Okay, so then here's then a big picture question, because we obviously sure. know that cities are not entitled to the federal funding that they want, that there are usually benchmarks that you must hit in order to qualify for certain funds to come into the city, correct? So obviously
Well,
when we're talking about the transportation department, I mean, transportation funding coming from the federal government into an individual city is contingent on hitting certain benchmarks. So we know that there are benchmarks.
You are missing one key part to this. Those benchmarks are set in law by the United States Congress and by the president when he signs the bill. Okay, they're set in law. The president does not on his own decide he's going to set some brand new benchmark. That's the issue.
And so your position is you don't think they're able to cite that before actually citing it. Because to be fair, I haven't seen them cite anything.
It's not a matter of opinion, Jason. It's a matter of law and a matter of fact. There is no law on the books that says that, you know, if you don't meet and I guess, you know, enforce what law exactly it is we're talking about, I guess would depend on the circumstance.
Well, basic
laws. This law does not exist. So legally, the president has no standing. And then politically, the larger problem here is, like I said, we actually have a problem in this country. And the president is choosing simply to sort of take political pot shots rather than dealing with the problem. And look, when you...
How is it, with respect on that one point, just very quickly, taking a political pot shot without addressing the problem, isn't that literally what Mayor Jenny Durkan did in not addressing CHOP and instead pretending that it was going to be a summer of love? She did literally nothing.
Point, we can talk about all you want. I mean, I sent out a letter saying that I oppose what the president has done. You want to say that other people have done things, so like, we can have that conversation in a second. But let me finish the point on this, because there is extremist violence in this country. If the president was focused on reducing violence and reducing conflict, his own Department of Homeland Security has said that the greatest threats that we have from extremism are coming from right-wing militia groups. I mean, you've got the Boogaloo Boys out there who are targeting and killing police officers. So if the president was focused on this violence issue, why wouldn't he say, I'm concerned about this, I'm concerned about this, my Justice Department is going to focus on it? No, what he wants is he wants people to think that the left wing is rising up and wants to scare people into thinking that they have this problem rather than addressing the issue. Now, look,
but they are rising up. They are rising up. In the case of the Boogaloo Boys,
the right wing.
One second. For example, in the Boogaloo Boys situation,
why do you only condemn the violence that comes from the political side of the spectrum you don't like? I condemn all violence.
I would love to ask that of the Democrats who won't even call out Antifa. In fact, according to Jerry Nadler, it's a myth that was made up in D.C. Now, you understand that that's not true. You understand that that's not true. But, I mean, I don't hear you calling out Democrats for doing this. I generally hear you calling out the president, and I understand it's political.
Okay. You want to answer that question? Here's the thing. You know, Jerry Nadler, if I keep track of everything that every Democrat and every Republican elected all across the country says that I don't agree with, I would have literally no time to breathe.
You keep track of what Trump says that you disagree with.
When the president of the United States doesn't just say something stupid, when he proposes to cut off funding and to harm my constituents, that rises to a slightly higher level of concern than Jerry Nadler misstating a fact.
Well, he didn't misstate it. I mean, he believes it. I don't think he's corrected the record since then.
Pick your own words, okay? With Jerry Nadler saying something that's wrong, okay, however you want to put it, that doesn't compare to the president of the United States deciding he's going to cut money off to my constituents illegally.
So when the Obama administration considered cutting off federal funding to North Carolina because they passed a bill that they don't like, the mere just having the conversation about it before it would even... So that was wrong, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'd have to look at the facts and see. I don't know that case. If, in fact, there was a law on the books that said you have to meet these particular criteria and somehow this meant they weren't meeting it, I'd have to look at it. I don't know. You just brought that up. It sounds to me off the top like it was wrong, which is probably why they didn't actually do it. But I don't know. I'd have to look into the facts of that. What I do know is that there is no law in the books that allows the President of the United States to cut off funds to a city because he decides they are, quote, anarchists, mm-hmm. end quote.
Well, and the courts will decide on that. Obviously, they take a slightly different position. I don't know which one is right. Again, you're right in that I certainly haven't seen a specific law that was cited. But we did talk with Russ Voigt from OMB, and, you know, he seems to think that this is legal. And, of course, like so many of these things, they end up getting figured out in court, and sometimes they lose,
but
sometimes they win.
I do want to get to the illegality of this is obvious to me, but the larger question is sort of what you raise. What's the best way to deal with the extremism that's going on in our country? And I think President Trump is the exact wrong way to deal with it, because it's all about conflict. It's all about right versus left. He's belittling people. Once again, he was saying that, you know, a citizen who happened to be born in another country apparently has no right to say anything about how our country should be governed. He says all these things that simply inflame people. Similarly, I think the left-wing approach right now on police reform isn't helping. I mean, we have the opportunity to genuinely reform the police department in a positive way. Instead, you know, too much of the dialogue is focused on, apparently, defunding the police, which I don't support, which doesn't make sense, and isn't helping change the police in the ways that we actually need to change them. So I'm very much against extremism on both sides.
But it does feel like you're more selective in who you call out. Now, when talking to me on a conservative talk show, hold on, let me make my point, and then you can tell me if you think I'm wrong. Because, you know, I follow you on Twitter, for example, and you call out President Trump on a regular basis. You have not sent out a tweet calling out Antifa. You don't use the term riot. You haven't called out violence except for white nationalism as of the last several months. And so I think it's a fair point to say that we should be going after both sides, which I do. And by the way, the Boogaloo Boys, which you made reference to, being charged. The difference is Democrats aren't calling it out. And here locally, we're not getting a lot of the charges against the people who are breaking the law. Instead, Mayor Jenny Durkan completely abandoned a 6-block radius of a city and then pushed back at the president, who was saying you need to take care of it. And because she didn't take care of it, two black teenagers were murdered.
Understood. Let me make 2 points on this. And the second one will be more in agreement with you. So hold your fire for just a second. Point number one is, of all the different pieces to this puzzle, the one that is causing the most disruption and the most conflict, and it is the greatest threat to the laws of this country and the Constitution, is President Trump. Everything that I'm interested in trying to do is going to be sort of precipitated by whether or not he's still in office come November 3rd. If he's still in office, the conflict will rage on, guaranteed, because he wants it. It is clear that he's not interested in bridging any sort of gaps here. So, yes, I am very much focused on the problem of President Trump leading our country, without a doubt. Second point, we have a significant problem on the other side of the ledger figuring out how we want to handle police reform and law enforcement. And I don't for a second support the idea that is being advanced that somehow if we just got rid of the police, everything would be fine. I believe in accountability, all right? And I think we have a real problem with some on the left and some in the city who don't see that point. I mean, it's a stupid example, I guess, but when the Seattle School District decided that their answer to COVID was to give everybody an A, you know, there has to be some accountability and personal responsibility, and I will agree with you. I don't think that is present anywhere near as much as it should be in Democratic politics in Seattle and King County. I don't disagree with that at all.
Well, there you go. Congressman Adam Smith, Democrat from Seattle, kind enough to come on a conservative talk show. I really do appreciate it.
No problem, Jason. I always enjoy the conversation.
Appreciate it. Again, that was Congressman Adam Smith. If you want to weigh in on this, send me a text, 1-800-465-8770. Back with more after this. On AM 770 KTTH for a segment where traffic and my ire collide. Joining me in studio to talk about some traffic issues is our good friend Chris Sullivan from our sister station, Kire Radio. Hello.
You get upset about traffic issues?
I know, it's very weird.
That's odd for
it's
you to
unlike
get
me.
Upset about anything.
I'm usually just very even-keeled and unemotional
that
about
is,
anything.
That completely describes you accurately, yes.
So, traffic in West Seattle is about to get much worse, and we have another reason why people shouldn't buy a Toyota Prius. Let's start with West Seattle.
Yeah, and the thing about West Seattle is this isn't a fully complete deal, but this is what the city wants to do because of the West Seattle Bridge, and we're about a month away from a decision on whether they're going to be repair or replace. Okay, so we still don't have an update on that, but we do have updates on what the traffic mitigation is going to be like, some of the projects that they want to do to help people get around it, because it's terrible getting in and out of West
Seattle. And we're still not even at the peak of where we normally would be because of the pandemic, but it's already just awful.
Yeah, some intersections on West Marginal Way have seen increases of traffic of 180% during it, and we're not even anywhere near normal commuting. And so one of the things that they thought about, and we found this out in the task force that met on Wednesday, was they want to make changes to West Marginal Way, which has really become the one of the primary ways people can get in and out of West Seattle because it can handle a little capacity. They want to get rid of two of the four lanes of traffic, of car traffic. One, you could kind of see, it's the northbound lanes. They want to make it freight only, which would allow trucks a little bit more access to get to the port of Seattle. So you might be able to see that one as a potential. The other thing they want to do is they want to take a southbound lane and make a protected bike lane. So you would lose capacity there.
We are now peak parody of all the times not to try to placate the activist bike community that is small in numbers, despite what the city will have you believe with all of these investments. It is now. And it is so patently disturbing that it's even part of a conversation.
And what's interesting about it is we had there's some bike advocates on this task force, and even they were like, we don't think a protected bike lane actually works there. All we need is a little bit of room for a pedestrian and bicycle path that gets us to the trail. There's just a little missing link there. And they're like, we don't think a protected bike lane actually works. And they're like, why did you guys, what's the data? And the city said, well, we don't actually have the numbers of how many bicyclists would use this, but we think a protected bike lane would work. And even the bike advocates were like, I love bike lanes. I love protecting bike lanes, but it doesn't really make sense here. The other thing is,
when you've lost the bike advocates, they're all crazy.
Because
every single one of them is insane.
I wouldn't say insane.
I would.
They're
that's
very
why
passionate.
I said it's where traffic meets my ire. When you've lost them, that is very telling.
Because the people who live in West Seattle who also bike realize just how vital that West Marginal Way is going to be while they're doing whatever they're doing. And even the freight-only lane going northbound, the head of the Port Commission, Peter Steinbrück, was like, let me be clear. The Port of Seattle does not support a freight-only lane, which is supposed to help the port. They're like, no, we don't think it's a good idea.
Yeah.
So where is Seattle coming up? It's like they're making ideas for things that they think will be fixed, but the people that they're supposed to be fixing for don't support them.
But isn't that normally the sort of MO from the Seattle Department of Transportation?
It can be. It was very odd.
They have an ideological agenda, and some people like it, some people don't. But they are so blinded by their ideology, they don't allow the context or anything else to sort of intervene with their plans.
No, they don't look at what might actually really work, at least in this case, or why whether it's necessary, and then they're going forward. And so that's why they were kind of backtracking a little bit when they saw the pushback from just about everybody who's like, you know, maybe we'll look at this a little better. This isn't a done deal. This is just what we're thinking. Now, obviously, there's some improvements along West Marginal Way by the Duwamish Longhouse that they need to do. There's a crossing there. They need to make a pedestrian and bike crossing there that's safe, because that road could be very dangerous, especially with the speed people are going in, with the use it's getting now. But yeah, when I heard they're losing they thought about half capacity for a bike lane and a freight only, and then the people it was supposed to help weren't even interested in those, I was like, oh, okay. So well, hopefully those things will not happen. Maybe they'll come up with some other ideas to make West Marginal a little bit more functional for everyone.
So, and by the way, kudos for not mentioning a water taxi as an option, because if you do that, I'm going to cut off your leg and beat you over the head with
it. Well, they already are going to
I don't want to hear any of that. It's
very
difficult
on a day like today. I've been out on them
so
on a day like today, and it's not great, but it does work for some people. I'm not
For a very small group of people, it works. I do not care about trying to placate a very small group of anything when we've got such a bigger picture issue.
That's true, but when you can't get out of West Seattle in any way, even an extra water taxi, I think, would be helpful for some. Because those people are hurting over there.
I always get the impression that they focus, the city, the focus is on a thing that will do very little, but they treat it as if it is going to solve any problem whatsoever, except for the problem of, like, 17 people.
Yes, well, I mean, each boat can carry, what, 130 people? I mean, we're not talking a huge impact, but I think even a little bit.
And you got to get to the boat.
Right.
It's just a dumb idea. So if you're just joining us, Chris Sullivan joining us in studio from our sister station, Cairo Radio. The other issue is I say Toyota Priuses, Prii. What is it?
Priuses? Apparently, I found out that the multiple Priuses is actually Prii.
Yeah. Another reason to hate this ugly looking vehicle. you've got one reason why you should at least be on the alert if you have one.
Yeah, because I know a lot of people out there have a Prii. Prius, whatever, to have this car. And right now, the catalytic converter thieves are back. Catalytic converter is an emissions device to control emissions. It's under your car. Nothing new. We've had them in this country, probably since the 70s.
Yeah.
And these thieves kind of go, they're like copper wire thieves. They kind of move around the country and go from place to place, strip it, and then move on to someplace else.
It's like the aliens in Independence
Pretty
Day.
Much, they, yeah. They ruin the natural resources and move on.
They come here.
Exactly. So last year, these thieves were really hitting the Bay Area and Sacramento, and this year they're back in Seattle. I got a tow truck driver who listens to us on the morning show is like, man, I've towed 25 Priuses this year that have had their catalytic converters ripped, and I've heard of so many other shops that are so busy with this. And then finally, Everett Police this week came out and put out an advisory. If you own a Prius, you make sure you park in a lighted area. Make sure you have security cams on. Try to park your car in a garage, because in the old days, to rip a catalytic converter, the popular car was a Toyota truck or a Toyota 4Runner, because you could slide underneath it, you could jack out the converter and move on. But Priuses now are so popular because you can jack them up so fast because the car's so light. Yeah. The guys just go in there with a Sawzall, rip out the thing out of the bottom of your exhaust system and take off. They can do it in 90 seconds.
What do they do with it?
Well, they turn it into an unscrupulous recycler, because recyclers are not supposed to take this kind of stuff, especially when you can tell that either end of the exhaust pipe is cut with a saw. It's generally a mark. But there are precious metals. Inside, there's palladium, there's platinum. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are things in there that are trading for like $3,200 an ounce on legitimate markets. That's what you get for palladium. And they're like 2 grams of it per converter. So you rip off 15 Priuses, you can go find $3,000 worth of palladium on the black market. So not saying
I would do this.
No.
But if I wanted to, I could get away with it right now.
Right now. Well, the thing is, I mean, if you see people jack up a car in a parking lot and then run away real fast, they're probably doing something wrong. But it's just kind of an alert that these people are back.
You say they're back. Are they from out of town?
It's hard to tell, but I've been...
Seeing these trends from cities to cities.
When I researched it, in 2018, there was a big article that it was really rampant through UK.
Mm.
Then in 2019, I started seeing a bunch of stuff all over Sacramento, all over, the Bay Area. And this year, I've seen Woodinville, Everett, South Seattle, West Seattle, Renton, all over the area. And so, it can cost you several $1,000s to get this thing replaced. Which means
you're not even saving the money you would have normally saved on not buying a gas guzzler.
Yeah, exactly.
Moral of the story, buy a gas guzzler.
Well, I'm not going to say that. I do like driving gas cars because I like pickup. I like to go fast.
You like speed.
Yes, I do.
That's Chris Sullivan. He likes speed, which is why he's got an eye on all the traffic trends all around Washington State. It turns out he's a masochist, and he just looks at other people getting stuck in traffic. You can read his work at MyNorthwest.com. Thanks for stopping by.
Anytime, Jason.
You're listening to The Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.